The day's top stories, the best bets, and Jason Page. This is the Cash In Early Edition.
Good to have you with us on this September 19th, 2023. Tuesday. The day before the most celebrated day of the year, my birthday. Yeah. What are you getting me? What are you getting me for my birthday? I should put up a gift register. I should put up a gift registry or something like that. You know, people on Facebook do the thing where they're like, donate to my cause of choice or something like that. I'm thinking maybe I should do like that Seinfeld episode, the human fund, where George Costanza's like just makes up a charity and then he pockets the money. I think I should do something like that. All right, hold on. I'm gonna bring in Nick Ferguson, who's sitting there screaming at his screen right now. He doesn't know I don't have him on yet. Former NFL safety Nick Ferguson's hanging out with us on this Tuesday edition of the show. That's my birthday present, is I get Nick today. Hi, Nick.
Hello, man. I was just giving you some grief about that, you know, being your birthday and not putting up a registry so someone can actually look for gifts and pick the one of choosing. But also, I was just like, with the Seinfeld reference, I called you Art Vandelay.
Vandelay Industries. What do I make? Latex.
Yeah.
So true. All right. So coming up in the show, Sam Yarnell will join us, our partner in crime. He'll come hang out with us. We'll get into some of the sports betting stuff on the baseball. Also, we'll recap the two Monday Night Football games, which we'll also do with Nick Ferguson here. So, Nick, before we get into the Monday Night Football stuff, let's talk about the Broncos. 0-2. This was supposed to be the soft part of the schedule with home games against the Commanders and Raiders. I got to be honest. I watched a good chunk of that game on Sunday with the Broncos. I thought Russell Wilson played one of his best games in a Denver uniform, despite the fact that they came out with a loss. How do you, you know, what are your impressions through 2 weeks when we look at a team right now that, you know, new coach, more offense, and still can't win?
I just look at it as a better 0-2 team. I know that sounds crazy, right? Because you think a team is 0-2, they can't be that good. But yeah, two things can be right at the same time. What we saw was progression from week one to week two. Week one, we only saw 16 points. Week two, we saw an offense that exploded to 21 points, where it was 21-3 at one point. And you thought the Broncos were going to run away with that game. And then all of a sudden, Washington was able to score right before the half, making it 21-11. And then coming out the second half, it just seemed as though the offense somewhat stalled, and everyone's asking the question, well, what really happened? And they're blaming Russell Wilson, and they're also blaming Vance Joseph, especially if you listen to Rex Ryan, who was on the Four Letter Network yesterday, saying, hey, if you had hired me, the defense would be number one.
God.
The problem is that offensively, they played great. The offensive line protected Russell to make those three deep shots. But in the second half, they fell apart. It just seemed as though the chemistry and the continuity wasn't there, and he constantly had pressure in his face. And on the defensive side of the ball, while Vance is being criticized, and fans are already pulling out their tiki torches and pitchforks and saying, we want him fired. The problem was, when guys were in position to make plays, they just didn't make plays. And I'll say this, and I talked to Kareem Jackson last week after the Jacoby Myers play. He has to stop launching at players. Because him going out and being ejected for the game really affected the Broncos' defense in the back end. Because when you take a safety like Turner Yale, who I think is a great safety, but he doesn't have a lot of playing experience, and you toss him in the game in a critical situation, that chemistry and that continuity is not going to be there. And he showed up, and the Broncos took an L at home, the second one of the season.
Let me ask you something about the launching. And we've seen a couple of things now with defensive players involving Colorado teams, both the college team, University of, and now the Broncos, with guys sort of launching themselves. Now, obviously, the rules were a little different towards the back end of your career than they are now. Try to give listeners, viewers, a sense of how difficult it is to pull up. Because everybody's like, well, you just got to pull up. You even hear the rules analysts in these games, the former officials, the Dean Blandinos of the world. Ah, the rule is, the onus is on the defensive player to not kill the offensive player. You know, everybody's moving at 100 miles an hour. An offensive player can lower his shoulder this way, but a defensive player has to react in such a way as to avoid a helmet-to-helmet hit. Try and bring listeners and viewers inside what that's like for a defensive player.
It's very tough. And for me, it's just that individuals who make these rules and enforce these rules, obviously they've never been in that situation, because if they had, they would know it's very difficult as a defender when you're coming downhill using max speed that somehow you're going to be able to change course and direction right before you get a right chance to hit someone. That's why it becomes really difficult with the quarterbacks. Like, if you're going to slide before you get to the defender. Don't wait to the very last second and then slide. And then if you are an offensive player and you're moving head first, whether you're trying to get those extra yards for the first down or score in the end zone, it makes it really difficult, because guess what? You're leading with your head. So if I'm running downhill, guess what? My head is attached to my body via my neck. So that's going to be the first thing that makes contact. So it makes it very difficult, because at this point, we have to ask ourselves, well, what do you want it? You want the head, the gut, or you want it below the knees? And we saw
Nick Chubb.
What can actually happen in that case? And if you were to ask quarterbacks or any offensive player, I'm sure they would tell you, I would rather you hit me in my head than hit me in my knee, because now I'm out for a long period of time.
Yeah, and we'll get to that Nick Chubb injury in just a second, because that was a gruesome scene last night on ESPN and on Monday Night Football. Focus to Deion Sanders and the Colorado Buffaloes, who are 3-0. I got crushed on Twitter, X, whatever they call it these days, because I was all over them when they were down in the fourth quarter on Saturday night. I don't care. At the end of the day, they're going to lose the next two games. They'll be 3-2. Not that I'm rooting for it, by the way, but they'll lose the next couple of games. They'll be 3-2. It'll be a little bit of a comeback down to earth moment. Take all my feelings aside. Let's just talk about it from an X's and O's standpoint, what this team is, what it isn't. First of all, Shedeur Sanders is so much fun to watch. For all the things about Deion that drive me nuts, and even some of the Shedeur Sanders stuff post-game with, you know, sort of Hollywooding, all that stuff that drives me nuts. Take all that aside, the kid on the field is so good. I mean, I was talking about this yesterday. Who was I talking about this with? Bill Bender, who does college football for the Sporting News. He and I were talking about it. He makes throws inside the pocket or outside the pocket on the run and fits things into windows that guys moving at that speed and with that sort of versatility in and out of the pocket aren't supposed to be able to make. So, I mean, I look at him and I could see him at the next level being very successful. That said, they got to protect him, because he's getting his you-know-what kicked back there, and he finds himself on his backside a lot. Is that, you know, sort of the big thing when you look at Colorado, the big drawback for this team? Is it what it's able to do and not do defensively? Give me a sense for where you think Colorado has some issues, especially this weekend when it comes to taking on Oregon, which, amazingly, they're a 3-touchdown underdog when it's an 18 versus a 13. It's crazy.
Well, I mean, Jay Novell hit the nail on the head when he said that, hey, listen, we're going to go after Shedeur Sanders and put pressure on him, because that was one of the glaring issues, their offensive line. And his athleticism allowed him to make some of those off-platform throws. And we saw him run in the game against the Rams, and we hadn't really seen him move around like that in the prior two games. He showed with that last drive, and Lewis Reddick was talking about it, if you want to prove that you are a Heisman candidate, this is an opportunity to have that Heisman moment and to move your team down the field, backed up on your own two, and score and get the 2-point conversion in overtime. That was extraordinary. But the one thing about Shador that I like, he plays with a certain type of poise in the pocket. And I'll say, not yes. bad for a guy who was a quarterback at HBCU over a year ago.
How does everybody miss? Tell me something, Nick, not to interrupt. How does everybody miss on him? Was his growth that rapid from the end of high school to where we are now? How do all these schools that have a zillion people out there looking for the next big thing? Nick Saban can't figure out who to play. He's got 3 quarterbacks. None of them can play. And here's Shador Sanders, who's playing at Colorado and came from an HBCU.
Well, Jason, you and I know the answer to that question, and it's a much bigger conversation, but when you look at certain players and where they come from, it's just like, no, they don't come from a lineage of great quarterbacking. When you think about Arch Manning, it's like, well, he was born to be the type of quarterback he was supposed to be. But when you look at players like Shador, it's just like, well, he's just a guy that's athletic playing the quarterback position. Think about what Bill Polian said years ago about Lamar Jackson coming out of the combine in Indianapolis. Well, you know what? Maybe he should work out as a wide receiver because he's a running back.
That's right.
Playing. So when you ask the question, why are many looking or overlook Shador Sanders? That's the reason why. So this is why there's been a groundswell of support for Deion Sanders and that Buffalo's program, not to mention Shador Sanders, because when that game started at 8:00 Mountain Time, it didn't end till like 2:00 on the East Coast. But everyone wanted to watch to see what was going to happen. Either you were hoping they fall on their face or you were hoping that they elevate their play. But what Shador Sanders is doing is he is making people, like his father said, believe in his ability. So this is a guy that I believe can play on the second level. And week after week, he proves it. If he goes out there against USC and Oregon, Bo Nix and Caleb Williams, even in the loss, and prove that he could put up points, we're going to have to start talking about this kid on a whole different level.
It sounds like Deion might only have him for 1 year there, too.
He knows that. He knows that.
Oh, I'm sure he does. How do you think they stack up against Oregon?
I think, you know, playing against Bo Nix and that team, I mean, it's going to be tough. But Oregon has shown some flaws over the past couple of weeks. But once again, can you protect Shador Sanders? That is going to be the biggest issue because when you look at what Jay Novell rolled out defensively, it was kind of like simple twists and games up front that the CU Buffs offensive line could not block. I mean, look, I'm not a big guy, and neither are you, but we could have gone out there collectively and done a better job than that offensive line. So they face 2 tall tests, you know, coming up here soon. Hopefully they find a way to get him out of the pocket, but it's going to be a little difficult knowing as though Travis Hunter is out for a couple of weeks.
Hanging out with Nick Ferguson, former NFL safety, Denver sports radio host here on the Cash In podcast. You can also watch us over on X at the Back Page on Twitch, Jason Page 77 on Facebook and YouTube as well. Just look for the Cash In with Jason Page. The 2 Monday night football games last night. First of all, how'd you feel about having the 2 Monday night football games only staggered an hour apart?
Well, for me, being a person who like loves football, it was great for me. And here's the part. I didn't have to play in the game, so you know I loved it.
See, I don't like the fact. I just don't like it for people who want to be able to watch both games, though. Like, I had the multi-view on for a little while, and I had both games there. But do an early game, do a late game if you're going to do that, like you used to do if you're the NFL with the Monday night game on the doubleheader. I think you're dividing your audience when you do it this way.
Well, yeah, you divide your audience, but with technology, like you said, you had the multi-view on, the picture-in-picture, so you can see them simultaneously. And just think about it, usually on Sunday, if you're watching, I guess, NFL Red Zone or you're watching the Sunday Ticket, you had an 8-box screen that you were watching multiple games. And just think about it, the deal that the NFL did, you know, with ESPN, that was a lot of money. So ESPN is trying to make sure they milk every single thing about it. So you got 2 games running simultaneously. You know how much advertising money that you're pulling in. So that was the case. And we know the NFL, the one thing they do love, they love those greenbacks.
Yeah.
So give to them, the more they're going to take.
They certainly do. Nick Ferguson hanging out with us. Nick, we saw the gruesome injury to Nick Chubb last night. We referenced it a little bit at the beginning of the interview. And, it, you know, the timing of it is, I don't know, ironic, I guess, is the word that comes to mind, because we're having this conversation right now, and it's so consequential with regard to the resetting of the running back market that we've seen. And the price and the dollars that, that running backs are getting. Now, Nick Chubb is fortunate in that he got, a $20 million guarantee in his last deal, which was like a $30-something million contract. So he's going to be okay, even if he never plays again, which is perish the thought, because this guy is so good. He's really one of the best backs in all of football. It's just the timing of this injury coinciding with the conversation we're having about running backs not being compensated fairly. What do you make of where that conversation goes after an injury like this?
Well, it's not going to go anywhere, because the individuals who will help move it along are the owners, and they're not going to budge. And this is one of those cases where I'll look at the NFLPA and their leadership, DeMar Smith, and I'll say, well, when they were negotiating a new collective bargaining agreement, they could have put parameters in there to protect running backs, because at that point, the league was at your mercy. They needed to get those TV deals done, but they settled for less practice time and an ability not to get suspended for smoking weed. To me, they did their players a disservice, and especially the running backs. And looking at the tragic injury, and I'm going to call it that and very dramatic, the injury with Nick Chubb, it does raise the question, like, these guys are the grinders, the guys you lean on, and you need to pay them. And I know the obvious, you know, comeback to that is that, well, you can go out and get a running back anywhere. Yeah, you can, but you can't go get a dominating running back like a Nick Chubb. So he's going to be missed in Cleveland. But once again, there goes that question. Are you going to hit him in his head or at below the waist? Because that's what Minka Fitzpatrick was facing, but he opted to go low, but he came in from the side.
What do you make of Pittsburgh? I'm not a Kenny Pickett guy, and I'm still not. I'm not convinced that he's sort of that franchise guy that some people believe he is. What was your take on Cleveland last night, losing a close game? Obviously, the loss of Chubb had to be devastating. And look, I mean, you've been on the field when guys get hurt like this. You know, we like to just think, hey, man, next guy up, and you're Kevin Stefanski after the game talking about, oh, next guy up, you know, you gotta get in there and just keep going. How hard is that for players?
It is really difficult, and usually in that circumstance, a coach is going to try to keep his troops mind in the game, and he's going to go give that Newt Rotney type of speech, win one for the Gipper, but it is emotional when you see a guy who put so much work in the offseason, you know how productive he was the previous year, to go down in the fashion that he went down. It definitely changes the momentum. And, you know, watching last night's game, you can tell it changed a lot of things for the crowd as well. But looking at Kenny Pickett, has he reached his full potential just yet? No. And I'll say this, here's the reason why for me, Pittsburgh's running game hadn't gotten on track. And if you know Pittsburgh over the past couple of years, or even over the franchise history, they've done two things well: run the ball, play great defense. The running game is not where it needs to, and the defense is so, and they really don't have a lot of impact weapons outside the numbers. I mean, you have Pickens, but you need a little more than that. So that's why we haven't really seen him really flourish the way that we thought he did, and when he was at Pittsburgh, I mean, in college. But I still think, man, he's a fine talent. And I'll say, man, he could be like Dan Marino if they put weapons around him. But you know how that works in the NFL. You need protection, you need a run game, and you need weapons in order to be successful in this league.
Let me ask you about one of the darlings of the NFL through the first 2 weeks. Baker Mayfield, you know, was a guy that basically was on his last leg when he went to L.A. last year to play for the Rams on a short week, went out there, had this miraculous drive, brings them down the field. And I'm convinced that's what got him a job in this offseason. That one game, that one performance, that one moment got somebody's attention to say, you know what, maybe there is still something here. It feels to me like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers believe in Baker Mayfield. Like, his leadership on the field, and I don't necessarily talk about rah-rah in the locker room, all that. But his example and how he's leading on the field, it seems like that team is buying into it. And all of a sudden, the NFC South, which we looked at as a dumpster fire before the season started, has three teams in it that are undefeated.
Yeah, very interesting, the whole Baker Mayfield thing. And you're absolutely right. The one game he had with the Rams changed his trajectory. And sometimes all you need is a change of scenery. But I also know this, right? As far as relationships are concerned, no one wants another person that no one else wants. So when someone wants you, that makes you a viable prospect. And that's the same thing that's happening with Baker Mayfield. He saw other teams wanted him. And based on that one game, Tampa said, well, you know what? We don't trust any of the quarterbacks that we have. So let's bring Baker in here. And Baker, knowing as though he's been on several teams, he wants to use this as an opportunity to prove that, hey, listen, I wasn't a first-round draft bust in Cleveland. So with weapons around me, I can make plays. And when you have wide receivers like Mike Evans down there, good Lord, man. That's why Tom Brady flourished down there, because he had those type of wide receivers. And this is the first time, I'll say this, in Baker Mayfield's career, let's be totally honest, that he's had offensive weapons around him like this.
All right, Nick Ferguson, we're going to do something a little different to finish this interview. Conversation. I hate the word interview. New segment on the show. It's called the Fast Five. We're gonna give you five rapid fire questions. I got 60 seconds to get them in. We'll put 60 seconds on the clock, and your first question starts right now. All right, Nick. Best player you ever stepped foot on a football field with was?
Dan Bailey.
Wow, I did not expect that name to come out of your mouth. Most overrated player you ever stepped foot on a field with?
Oh, man, that's a tough one. I have to come back to that one, man. Wow, overrated. God.
Yeah, that's why we ask it. We'll come back to it. We got 60 seconds. Will Colorado finish the season in the top 25?
Yes.
Will the Broncos finish the season above 500?
Yes.
Wow. In your next life, the professional athlete or sport you wish you could play?
Basketball.
You're not tall enough.
Hey, man, you asking the questions. I'm giving the answers.
You didn't answer the one about whether or not who the most overrated player is.
Chad Johnson.
Wow. There it is. Chad Johnson. That's going to go viral for the wrong reasons.
Hey, listen.
You think Ryan Clark was nasty. Woo.
Hey, look, if you watch him run routes, like he's great as a route runner, but he's got to run the right route for the quarterback every single time. Like if you ask me, well, who would I rather take? Chad Johnson or Terrell Owens, I'm going to take Terrell Owens all day, every day, and twice on Sundays.
That's Nick Ferguson. Catch him on Denver Sports Radio during the week. Former NFL safety with the Broncos, Jets, Texans as well. Nick, always a pleasure, my friend. We'll do it again soon.
All right. Overrated.
Good to have you with us on this Tuesday edition of the Cash In Podcast. Thanks to Nick Ferguson for hanging out. If you are not following us on X, formerly known as Twitter, at the Back Page, on Twitch, Jason Page 77, and over on Facebook and YouTube, just look for the Cash In. Or subscribe to the podcast. Every day, once the show ends, within 30 minutes or after I walk the dog, the podcast is there ready for you like a good old friend. Ah, Sam Yarnell is here hanging out with us. Good conversation with Nick today. On the
former Buffalo Bill.
Former. No, did he play for the Bill? No, I thought he was. I don't think he ever played for the Bills.
In the year 2000.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Let me double check, but
I thought
sure.
He only played Denver, Jets, Houston.
Let's see here. Nick
Ferguson. Let me know. Let me, because now I'm kind of curious. I always say.
All right. I got it here. I got it. Cincinnati Bengals, Saskatchewan Rough Riders, Rhein Fire, Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Shout out the CFL.
He was wearing that. You missed it in the interview. He was wearing a Winnipeg Blue Bombers sweatshirt and hat today.
Shout out to the CFL, man. Then back to the NFL, Chicago Bears. Then back to the CFL, to the Winnipeg Blue Bombers again. Then he was a Buffalo Bill in the year 2000 as a practice squad member. Then he signed with the Jets, the Broncos, and the Texans. So in the NFL, it was Bengals, Bears, Bills, Jets, Broncos, Texans.
Wait a minute. How'd you miss the Hartford Colonials in that?
Maybe this list only contains...
That was a professional football league. Josh McCown, Dante Culpepper, Jeff Garcia.
Did they play against this is NFL Europe.
No.
Wow, yeah. So they have NFL Europe
That's
listed.
Crazy that they have all listed. These leagues and not the UFL, which had some really good players in it. And yeah, of which I was the play-by-play guy. And my UFL jersey is behind me. Wow, that's bad.
No UFL listing.
Oh, well. No love for the UFL, I guess. That short-lived league was just a couple of years.
I was going to say it only lasted like about 3 years. Seasons.
About two, yeah, really. Two. I was the play-by-play voice of the Hartford Colonials, hosted their weekly TV show. It's good times. Good times. What'd you make of the two Monday Night Football games? I mean, look... I'm not sold on Kenny Pickett. I'm not sold on Pittsburgh. I still like Cleveland. I mean, let's look. Divisional game on the road, close game. They'll split the season series. Cleveland will beat them. Right. You know, back in Cleveland. You know, look, teams in that division have to be, you know, smelling blood in the water with Cincinnati struggling. Yes, Baltimore's 2-0, but there has to be a feeling in that division that, hey, you know, this thing is kind of out there for us.
I mean, what was my bet to win this division when we did all of our divisional previews? It was the Baltimore Ravens, and it was exactly for this reason. To answer your question, though, what did the Monday night games teach us? First of all, that Saints-Panthers game was one of the worst football games of the season so far. I mean, my gosh, the amount of memes that came out of that of just, you know, it was like a horrible fist fight. That's exactly what it was. It was like watching two just incapable human beings fight each other. It was a bad football game. I can't believe I had to waste an hour watching it until that second game started. Listen, we overestimated Deshaun Watson, Jason. Everyone did. I think even I did, and I wasn't high on him coming out of Houston. I didn't think he was very good.
I wasn't either.
I didn't think he earned that money that the Browns decided to pay him. And he's kind of proven us. He's proven you and I right. He's kind of showing to be a bust.
Yeah, it's still too early to say bust, though. You can't bust. You can bust out the B word. You can't break out the B word. Two games into a season. No, but it's year two.
Five, though.
No, but I'm saying in terms of with Cleveland. You know?
So the Browns contract, maybe not necessarily. Right. It is. I would say it's. But like, if we think about all of the, you know, all the draft capital the Texans spent on this guy, all the buildup around this guy the whole time he was in Houston, then the big move he made to Cleveland. Right. When has this guy ever realistically been a top seven quarterback in the league? Like once, his second season, I believe it was his second season, when the Texans beat the Bills in the playoffs in the wild card round and then lost in the divisional round. That was the only year that Deshaun Watson was an actual top seven quarterback in the league. And quite frankly, his one playoff win came over a Tyrod Taylor-led Buffalo Bills team.
Yeah.
I don't know why this narrative is continuing. It's a shame what happened to Nick Chubb. That was another thing that
came. It's so like, upsetting. It is
so bad for football, right? He's a fun player to watch. He's, you know, quite frankly, I'm very interested to see how much Deshaun Watson struggles without him in that offense now, right? Jerome Ford is explosive. He definitely showed that last night. He has that factor to him. But he's not going to have the production that Nick Chubb had, right? There's not, as we said with Aaron Rodgers and Zach Wilson, there's not enough ayahuasca on this planet to turn Jerome Ford into Nick Chubb. So I'm very interested to see where this Cleveland Browns offense goes over the next 4 weeks.
I'll tell you right now, they're going to have to air it out more. they're going to have to throw the football more. I mean, it's as simple as that.
And they're going
to
crash and burn doing that.
We'll find out. I mean, we'll find out soon enough. That's why they play the games. You know, we'll see exactly what happens. Carolina, you mentioned the snooze fest that game was. And, you know, now we've got a couple of weeks sampling of a few of these rookie quarterbacks. And Anthony Richardson is clearly the class of the three so far.
Yeah. Aren't you? I hope all the listeners listened to my advice before the season and took him in fantasy as your backup quarterback, because when he comes back from this concussion, if he's even going to be out this next couple of weeks, right? When he comes back, he's going to be a viable starting option, especially in that offense. If they get Jonathan Taylor back, if that situation gets worked out, you know, God forbid they work out the contract situation with Jonathan Taylor, get him locked up for a couple more years. By the time AR-15 comes back, he's got Jonathan Taylor. I guess AR-5 now, right? But by the time Anthony Richardson comes back, he's got Jonathan Taylor in that backfield waiting for him. Colts will be a viable option next year. They're going to be a very investable team next year.
Yeah, I agree. Well, look, I mean, also, though, you look at that division. If he's healthy, they're going to, I think when we get to week 14, week 15, I still think they're going to be in the mix. That division's just not that good.
It depends how their defense pans out, right? And, like, you got to think about the skill position players besides Jonathan Taylor, right? Zach Moss is not a running back that can carry you to the playoffs. I don't care, you know, how much you want to give him the ball. He showed it in Buffalo. He's not a playoff tier running back. Who do they have in terms of wideouts, right? You got Michael Pittman and who else? Nobody. It's kind of tricky in that regard. I really think they need Jonathan Taylor back if they want any chance of being competitive.
It is crazy, though. And I know it's only 2 weeks, and I'm the first one to caution everybody about making any, you know, deducing anything from just 2 weeks. You know, teams' records when they're 0-2, making the playoffs, blah, 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 blah. This company has their percentage to make the postseason at blah, blah, blah. Three teams in the NFC South are 2-0. It's supposed to be a garbage division. I know. Look, will it last? Probably not. But it is worth mentioning right now, along with the NFC East, you know, the two most successful divisions in football right now. Just saying.
Well, it's going to be really funny when we look back on that division at the end of the year where three of the teams are under 500. And we're saying, hey, remember when we were going into week three and, you know, three of these teams were 2-0?
I don't know if that's going to be the case. I'm not sold on that anymore.
You think one of the Saints, Panthers, or the Falcons are going to finish above 500?
You don't think the Saints are going to finish above 500?
They look a lot like a 8-9 team to me. They look like an 8-9, 7-10 team. They don't look like a 10-7.
You're going to make me do something I don't want to do. Here we go. Saints schedule.
That's what I'm here for.
Here's the Saints schedule. Saints schedule is at the Packers. Winnable. Home for the Buccaneers. Really? Home for the Buccaneers. That's a toss-up game. I mean, at the Patriots, winnable. At the Texans, I mean, their schedule is such. The Saints could win a lot more games than I think we're giving them credit for right now. Could be a lot of close games. It could be some smoke and mirrors. But, I mean, look, I'll run through it real quick. At the Packers, home for the Bucks. At the Patriots.
Man. Loss.
Toss up. But, I mean, these are but a lot. What my point is, they could easily go 1-3, and they could just as easily go 3-1 over the next four games. Then they're home for the Jags, at the Colts, home for the Bears, at the Vikings, at the Falcons, home for the Lions, home for the Panthers, home for the Giants. Seems like they always beat the Giants. Home for the Saints. Home for the at the Rams. At the Buccaneers, home for the Falcons. They got an easy schedule.
All right. So listen, this is what we're doing. This is exactly what we are. We're walking down this path right now.
Yep.
We're doing exactly what we did when Derek Carr was with the Raiders, right? We're overestimating his team. We're telling ourselves that they've got an easy schedule, and then this quarterback is going to lead this team out there and lose half these games we're saying are easy automatic wins, right? It's just how it works. It's what Derek Carr does in an offense. So, yes, on paper, looking ahead at these games here on September 19th, they could be a 13-4 team, right? That looking at this schedule, you could make a realistic argument that the Saints go 13-4 this year. But at the end of the day, I promise you that Derek Carr will take 5 of those 13 wins at least and turn them into losses himself.
Look, I'm not a Derek Carr guy. I'm just looking at the schedule though, and
I am a Derek Carr guy. He's got a history of doing this, and I don't see why he would do anything besides that in this offense with how many similarities there are to the Las Vegas.
I think at least two teams finish over 500 in that division. And it might wind up being more. It really might. I'm curious to see how the Buccaneers do at home against the Eagles. I'll give you two games this weekend that sort of parallel each other. Buccaneers, Eagles, Colorado, and Oregon. You're talking very similar situations. Nothing was expected of Colorado before the season started. I think their win total was 4.5, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe 3.5. I think it was 4.5 was what Vegas had the total at. The Buccaneers were expected to be a dumpster fire. Both teams off to really good starts, but this week they get their tests. Which one has a better chance of passing? What's the line? What's the line on that Eagles Buccaneers game?
That is the Monday night game. Eagles -5 in the hook. Total
that's a
46.
Monday night. That's the Monday night game.
That's the first Monday night game, Jason. We've got another Monday night doubleheader next week.
Which means I got to balance bowling and watching two football games again, which I was doing last night. By the way, a very rough night, a very bizarre night for me bowling-wise. I shot a 197 the first game.
Oh, my God.
Had an open.
Oh, my God.
Second game, I shoot 170. I was terrible. And then the third game, I think I shot 227, 226. Weird night. Just all over the place.
More than 90 once in my life.
All right, it's that time of the show where Sam Yarnell dispenses some sports betting advice. Cue the music.
And now the Cash In presents, it's Cash Cow, the Prince of Picks, Sam Yarnell.
Sam, it's all you.
Jason, we've reached a very interesting point in the Major League Baseball season, and you and I kind of just stopped talking about Major League Baseball.
Amazing.
When football started.
Isn't it amazing how that happens when the NFL starts? And I'm the biggest baseball guy that anybody will ever meet. And it's just NFL sucks all the oxygen out of the room.
Well, your Yankees also fell out of playoff contention like somebody jumping out of a plane without a parachute.
Carry on!
Anyway, we've got some interesting markets to look at in terms of making the playoffs, right? Because we could talk until the cows come home about who's going to win the World Series, who's going to win the American League, who's going to win the National League, but we got time for that. We're running out of time for who's going to actually make the dance, right? And some pretty interesting numbers up on the FanDuel Sportsbook, the unofficial sportsbook of the Cash In podcast. But when you look at these races, National League is pretty wide open between 5 teams. You could even consider 6, but I don't really think the Giants are going to make it. The Phillies, Cardinals, Cubs, Reds, and Marlins are all fighting for the 3 wild card spots, right? And then you've got the Diamondbacks. I'm sorry, I said Cardinals. I meant Diamondbacks. Diamondbacks, Cubs, Reds, and Marlins are separated by 1 game in the standings. When you look at the odds for these teams to make the playoffs, the books think that the Marlins are going to be the team to miss it. If you think the Marlins are a viable option, it's a plus number, plus 108 right now. But I'm not touching anything in the National League. I think the National League is way too volatile this time of year, especially with the talent pool we have. in the National League. Instead, I want to look at the American League, where it's really a four-team race for those three playoff spots. And it's really Toronto, Seattle, and Texas competing for the last two of those three playoff spots. The Rays have already locked up the top wild card spot. The Yankees aren't going to compete for the last one. So one game separates the Blue Jays, Mariners, and Rangers. And I really think the Blue Jays are going to blow this, Jason.
The Yankees,
huge.
Well, I'll tell you what. The Yankees will have a major say in whether or not that happens. And trust me, the Yankees would love nothing more than to keep Toronto. There's a simmering sort of rivalry there. Vlad Guerrero's kind of talked some junk about the Yankee organization because they didn't want to sign his dad back in the day, and he said he'd never go play for the Yankees. The Yankees would love to keep the Blue Jays out of the postseason.
So, listen, essentially when you're betting these numbers, right, we're betting for the next week and a day, week and 3 days, essentially. It's like we have like 11 days left in the Major League Baseball season. And the Blue Jays have a one-game lead over the Mariners and the Rangers. Now, if you think the Blue Jays can lose this lead and fall out of the playoffs, which I do, it's plus 390 for the Blue Jays to miss the playoffs right now. The sportsbooks think that they're just going to walk all over the New York Yankees and sweep their way into the postseason. I'm going to bet on the Blue Jays to miss the playoffs. I'm going to go Blue Jays no to make the playoffs in 2023 at plus 390. And Jason, I really like this bet. I've been thinking about it for a couple of days, but the Toronto Blue Jays have just had so many struggles this year, whether, you know, right from the jump with the whole Alek Manoah thing. He was supposed to be this amazing pitcher after he had a breakout season last year. He was going to build on that this year. He's in the Florida Trade Complex League like 3 weeks into the season. What are we doing? They've been a mess. They haven't been able to figure anything out, and that offense has not been near what they had hoped it to be. Vlad Guerrero has looked broken at certain points during the season. Bo Bichette's been good, but we all kind of expected that. Where has Kevin Biggio been? No one knows what happened to him. George Springer hasn't produced at the level that he did in Houston that everyone was expecting him to at least mirror, if not expand upon, when he got north of the border. I have no confidence in this Blue Jays team. They're weak, in my opinion, across the board. I really think that they're going to miss the playoffs here in the next couple of weeks, Jason. And I think so much that I'm going to let my money do the talking. Blue Jays, no to make the playoffs at plus 390. Let's book it.
Wow. Sammy Arnell, ladies and gentlemen. By the way, Paige versus the Prince, it was not pretty for either of us this weekend. Gotta call a spade, man. Sam was 1-2-1. I was 1-3. God, I think Joe Fortenbaugh was picking the games. Jeez.
Hey, what do we have against? What do we have against that guy, Joe Fortenbaugh?
I can't stand Fortenbaugh. And he's thin-skinned, so I will go after him anytime I can because I know it drives him nuts. I once sat in a bat. True story about Joe Fortenbaugh. I've got stories about everybody. I was sitting in a men's room stall at Odyssey's 95.7 The Game, where I was hosting one of my two stints there. And Fortenbaugh was doing the morning show, and he was picking NFL games. And he wound up going like 0-4 for like his picks or something, like 1-5. It was some awful number. And I crushed him for it jokingly on the air, half joking. And he went to management and he said he made fun of me. He made fun of me getting the games wrong. Me and my cheap suits on ESPN News. Oh. Like, come on, dude. Now you know they've gotten to like the bottom of the barrel at ESPN Radio when Joe Fortenbaugh is doing a show daily there. They're like, well, we got to justify him somehow. They pulled everybody out of that Caesars thing that they had, I think, out in Vegas.
Because ended with the ESPN bet thing.
Yeah, no, I know. With the Penn Gaming thing. But that's going to be interesting to watch, too. As we get closer to the launch of that. I mean, that's a Hail Mary. It's a Hail Mary for Penn. It's a Hail Mary for ESPN. I mean, they've got there's so much disruption right now, even in the gaming space, in the sports betting space. And not all these companies are going to make it. Not all these sports betting companies are going to make it. And you continue to see, you know, consolidation and partnering and trying to mesh two companies together, media companies with sports betting companies. It just continues to be the trend. Speaking of sports betting, I want to get to this before we say goodbye today. Everybody can rest easy today. I want everybody take a deep breath, exhale. Phil Mickelson is not betting on the NFL this year. We can all rest easy because Lefty is dealing with addiction. And he had to put a post out on social media to open up and bare his soul to us that he's not betting on sports anymore. He's doing it for his family. He had to make sure everybody knew. He couldn't keep it private. Like everything else he decides to do, which, you know, he doesn't talk about anything. No. Phil Mickelson wants you to know he's no longer gambling millions of dollars on NFL football games because it's the right thing to do.
God. Well, I'll tell you, there are people who are not resting easy about that news, Jason, and those are the sports books. Have you seen the guy's record? I mean, whatever the opposite of a sharp is, Phil Mickelson's that. We'll call him a dull. That's what we call Phil Mickelson. Well, you know, the sports books see Phil walking up, or the sports books see there's a golf tournament coming to Vegas, and they already start calling Phil's agent so you can give him the nicest room so that he spends all of his money at their casino because he loses it all, man.
He lost $1 billion, according to Billy Walters. $1 billion over 30 years on football, basketball, and baseball. Now, look, I've told my own stories, so I'm not speaking out of turn, but I've been telling these stories for years about my own losses in gambling. And I lost easily $250,000 to $350,000, which doesn't sound like a lot when you hear $1 billion for Phil Mickelson, but it's all relative to how much money you make. And I never made Phil Mickelson money. So for me to lose that much over the course of, I don't know, 20 years, I mean, it's a lot of money. I can think of a lot of things I could have done with $250,000 to $350,000. I lost, how much did I lose in one night? I've told this story so many times now that I can't even remember. I had a night where I lost, and it was, not to get like dark here, because I could kind of laugh about it now, but I had a night where I lost 25 grand in one night when I was working at Sirius. Might have been 06. I was doing play-by-play for the Newark Bears minor league baseball team in the Atlantic League. Shout out Ricky Henderson, Bill Matlock. I was doing play-by-play for the Newark Bears, and I was working at Sirius XM as a sports radio host. And one night, I lost like 25K between online blackjack on a betting website, one of these offshore sites, and betting on sports. And Nick Costos was working with me at the time because we both worked at Sirius. And we used to do these degenerate late nights there. We'd, you know, be betting on late night NBA games. And I got crushed, lost so much money. I finished my overnight show, which I did like a zombie. Finished my overnight show. I walked over to the FV train at 4750 Rockefeller Center. I was the only one on the subway platform. It's like 3:30 in the morning. I walked down on the subway platform. I laid on the tracks, and I just waited for a train to hit me. I've told this story many times. And as I'm laying there, because trains only come like every 20 minutes at that time of night, if you're lucky. And as I laid there, the only thing that saved my life was I had this crazy thought came to my mind. Well, if I get killed by a train right now, who's going to do play-by-play for the Bears game tomorrow? True story. I got up, hopped back on the platform, took the train out. But I losing 25 grand in a night. Forget $1 million or 100,000 or 500. Losing 25 grand in a night. I wanted to kill myself. Can you imagine what it's like to lose seven figures on one game. I don't care how much money you have. That's got to sting. What's the most? Can I ask?
Love
you?
Has yeah. problems limiting yourself. Call 1-800-GAMBLER for help.
Listen.
What's the most you've ever lost? Can I ask you? What's the most you've ever lost on a single game?
825 racks. Ain't anything close to that. It's a good question. It
Come
is.
On. You don't know. Everybody knows their bad beats and bad losses more than they know their great wins.
Because there, I have like a couple of just like D days. Like there are a couple of days that were just like I could. So the second round of the playoffs when I was a senior in college, the second round of the NFL playoffs, I think I lost hundreds one day. And as a college kid, like that means a lot to you.
Yeah.
I think it was like I lost like $450, but I also there's an asterisk with that because I think like 50 or 75 of it was in free bets because it was when all the gambling had just been legalized. Sure. So everyone had sign up stuff, but that was a bad day. The World Cup, the most recent World Cup last fall, when we were getting to the knockout stages and the games became a lot more predictable, I got up a ton. I think it was in the final. Yeah, it was the Messi versus Mbappe final. And I bet the house on both of them to score multiple goals, parlayed them both to score together. I'm talking made a crap ton of money. And within like a month, just gambled it all away on baseball. It was just all gone on like betting the Nationals and like betting fun stuff. So
yeah.
That was a little bit less of like it all happening in one night, but it was like this incredible streak of losses after this one awesome day of winning, going up like I'm talking like 17, 18 units in one day and then just blowing it all away in less than a month. That was one of the other, but that second round of the playoffs, second round of the playoffs, 2022 killed me.
Yeah. We've all had our stories. That's for sure. I would have had a bad one this weekend. That's for, cause I had a few NFL games I really liked. I went 1-3. So
put a hole in a ceiling once.
Put a hole in a ceiling. Really?
It was a low ceiling. It was that day. It was that day in my college yeah, house. We had a low ceiling in our basement.
Yeah.
Someone scored a touchdown, and I went, yeah.
Wait a minute. It was in a good moment that you put a hand through a ceiling? It wasn't
it was an accident. It was totally an accident. It wasn't rage at all.
That's going to do it for us on this Tuesday. We'll be back on Wednesday. I don't know why I think tomorrow's Thursday, but we'll be
I'll
back
take
tomorrow.
An off day tomorrow.
No, we don't need an off day. No off days. It's the NFL season, man.
That's right. The grind never stops.
The grind never stops. We live for the grind. The grind is what makes it good. Thanks to Nick Ferguson for hanging out with us. Former NFL safety, Denver sports radio host, and briefly a Buffalo Bill. There you go. See, Sam's so happy. If you haven't subscribed to the podcast, make sure to do it on Spotify, Google Play, Apple, Amazon. It's all over the place. The Cash In Podcast. We'll be back at it on Wednesday. Give us a like. That is Sam Yarnell. I am Jason Page. It's going to do it for the Cash In on this Tuesday, September 19th, 2023. Catch you all back here tomorrow.